It sounds really loud to me. I'll deafen you all. First of all, before I actually start speaking, I just want to say thank you for those people, and many of you, I'm sure, who have been praying for my neck and shoulder. Very often we ask for prayer and sometimes we don't always hear then what has happened. And whilst it's been a bit of an up and down journey with my neck, at the moment it's feeling fine. The medication is now controlling it and I'm able to sort of do things okay. So thank you very much for your prayers. I have and always will believe that this church is very good at praying for individuals and praying as individuals, and I thank you for that. One of the interesting things I've learned over these few weeks, I mean, in the initial stages, it was very, very painful. And we were away on holiday. And I said to Ben and Caleb, can you pray for Grandma's shoulder? And they did. But the interesting thing is that every week when Ben comes to our house, and I say, oh, don't do that because my shoulder's a little bit sore, he'll say, shall we ask Jesus to make it better, Grandma? And before I can say yes, he then says his very simple little prayer. Jesus, make Grandma's shoulder better. Amen. And as far as he's concerned, the deal's done. So I think we've a lot to learn from children, and don't ever let us think that children have never had anything to contribute in prayer or in prayer meetings, because I believe they have. But I just wanted to start with a thank you, because sometimes, often that gets looked aside, you know, we forget to say thank you as well as please. This morning was a bit of a challenge in a way, and I'll just give you a little bit of the background of where I'm coming from. But before I do that, and I'm sure you'll be very embarrassed if I say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. If you haven't already listened to Steve's two sermons, please listen to them. You might not like them. You might not agree with them, you might not want them to be what you wanted to hear, but you do need to hear them. We need to hear them as a church. And what I have to say this morning, in a way, follows on from what Steve said the past couple of weeks. So if some of it sounds familiar, I haven't just copied what Steve said. It is something that has been there for a while. But you will hear some familiar things, I'm sure. About a year ago, when I was first starting to speak again, I felt there were some things that I could speak on. And some of them I did speak on pretty much straight away. Prayer and worship, belonging, were some of them. But one of the things that I said to the leaders at the time when we met was that there's just something about our purpose as a church. I'm not quite sure I'm the right person to speak on it, but I just feel that that's something that God has sort of dropped into my heart and mind. And as you'll know, for those of you who have been around, that's something I haven't spoken on yet. But in the summer, probably sort of July, when I was got the date for today for speaking, and thinking, I've been through everything, God, that I feel that you've spoken to me about. I'm not quite sure. And I emailed Louise and she sent me an email back and I sort of considered some of the things on the list. And then I just kept getting this word, purpose. Purpose. And I thought, okay, I'll sort of explore that one. So over the summer holidays, that is something I've been thinking about a lot, and feel that this morning is the right time to speak about our purpose as a church. That was before Steve said anything at all. And Steve and I hadn't had a conversation about it. I didn't know what he was going to speak about. And he didn't know what I was going to speak about either. So it's not a collusion. It's a God thing, I believe. And I think God put those thoughts in my mind all that time ago, but that it was for such a time as this. And sometimes God gives us words and will give you words in the congregation that seem very relevant and precious to you and very important, but it would still be for such a time as this. And today might not be that day. It might be a word that you need to hold till it's the right time. And that's where obviously you need to sort of check that out with somebody else. But I felt that it hasn't been the right time. I've considered it a couple of times, but it never seemed to be the right time. So, I only listened to Steve's second sermon yesterday morning, so anything I say was prepared before that. And before I'd heard his first one, and I was praying about this, I just kept getting the question, what are you waiting for? And I said, are you asking me that, God? Or are you asking us that? Because if you're asking me, I don't know. I don't know what I'm waiting for. If you're asking us, maybe we might get a bit of clarity together. But I'm still asking that question. So I just want to, first of all, start by looking at the purpose of the church universal, the church, well, where all believers are called to, and then just narrow it down a bit. That won't take very long as a talk, but I've got a lot of questions that I feel God has asked me and he wants me to ask you. So please bear with me. It probably isn't going to be a normal kind of sermon. I'm hopefully not going to be very long, but as you know, that all people get up and preach, say, I'm not going to be very long, and then it's usually twice as long as the normal sermon. Well, hopefully it won't be this morning. But so, what is the purpose of the church? I've got quite a few scriptures that I'd just like us to read together. And the first one is in Luke chapter 4, verse 18. Because these are some of the things that Jesus either said he was called to do and be, or he left for us to do. And if we are the followers of Jesus, then what he left to do was to carry on what he started. The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed. That's what Jesus got up and said when he spoke in the synagogue. And some people didn't like that. But actually, that's what he felt God had given him. And so that is part of our purpose. Not too easy, is it, some of that, really? He's anointed me to preach good news to the poor. So tell everybody the good news that Jesus can be for you, for your life, for your family, for earth, for all people. He sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, those who are captive to, it might be pornography, it might be overeating, it might be wrong ideas about themselves, whether it be overinflated ideas or whether they think they're not worth anything. It could be all kinds of things. It isn't just a prisoner in prison. Recovery of sight for the blind and replacing the oppressed. So a few miracles there as well that he's called and asked us to carry on. The next verse is in Matthew 11, verse 2 to 6. When John heard in prison what Christ was doing, he sent to his disciples to ask him, "Are you the one who was to come, or should we expect someone else?" Jesus replied, "Go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is preached to the poor. Blessed is the man who does not fall away on account of me." In the version I looked at, it says, "And blessed is he who does not take offence at me." So here Jesus is saying, everything I said that was said by Isaiah, can you see? That's what's happening. That's what I'm doing. And if it is, then I am the one you've been looking for. Then in Luke 10, verse 27, Jesus answered, Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind. And love your neighbour as yourself. So part of what we're called to do is first of all to love God and to love our neighbour. And then in John 13, Jesus says, But I give a new command to you, love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. Why? Because by this all men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. So not much we've got to do, not much we're called to really, is it? But we haven't quite finished yet. So Matthew 28 verses 19 to 20. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations. Okay? Baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always, even to the end of the age. So, that is the purpose of the church. It's to be anointed to preach the good news. It's to heal the sick, help the oppressed, pray for the poor, look after one another, love God, love our neighbour, and love one another in the church. And then when we've got that, go out and do it bigger. So, I can now sit down and say, well, that's our purpose. Are we up for it? So I guess that's my first question. You don't have to answer now. We'll have some time to think about it a bit later. But that isn't just our purpose as Forest Gate Church in Mitcheldean. That is a purpose of any church, anywhere, any time, from the moment Jesus left this earth to the minute he comes back, or if we're part of those churches until we ourselves go to be with him. So we all have this purpose. But the difficult bit is not knowing that, is it? It's, so what bit of it do we start with? Or what are we called to specifically? Because if you look at some churches are very involved in, for example, working with the homeless, working on the streets on the night. A lot of churches have felt their focus is to, because a lot of young people are going to nightclubs, a lot of disruption on the streets in big cities on the night, and have felt they are called, that one of their purposes to go out and minister to those young people. Interestingly enough, one of my previous job, I worked with one of those young people who had been ministered to in such a way by, interestingly enough, another member of our staff who happened to be a Christian. She had come out of a nightclub, been very drunk, and taken her shoes off when she was dancing, had no shoes on, and now the colleague who I worked with had provided flip-flops, made sure she got to a place where she was safe to go home. It was very interesting because the young woman who had received the end of the ministry still quite a lot of questions about Christianity and about what it was, but still she knew there was something different. And when she left, she said, when the other girl left, she said, we're so very different and yet we have become such good friends. I respect her so much. So there's those seeds there. I had conversations with her as well, very interesting conversations. And I don't want to go down this route too much, but the church doesn't accept gay people at all, does it? It hates them. Was the opening gambit on a trip we went on a course together. So she was obviously questioning. So there are different things we are called to. Now in Mitcheldean, as far as I know, and please correct me if I'm wrong, there isn't a nightclub. There isn't hordes of young people pouring out onto the streets who we need to make sure get home on a night. There aren't people sleeping rough in the middle of Mitcheldean, as far as I know. Please correct me if I'm wrong. So to say that was our purpose, our specific calling to fulfill this, wouldn't be true, would it? Because that isn't something we need to do. So what is it that we at Forest Gate are called to do? It's a question that we, each of us, have to answer. What is my part in it, and what have we together? I guess the whole thing of purpose kept coming back to me again when, and it's a few months ago now, I think, that John and Louise asked us to consider whether we should continue to meet here at D Magna or whether we should go back to the YNC. And although for me, you know, I don't particularly mind where we meet, as long as we meet and do what God's doing, but it was a question that just kept coming back. And I think God put that question there for a reason. Much more than, do we just meet in this building or that building, but what are we meeting in wherever we meet for? And as I've prayed myself, and in prayer meetings that I've been part of, and as I've talked to some other people as well, the thoughts kept coming back. The question is, not should we meet at Dean Magna or should we meet at the YNC, but what is our purpose and do I want to be part of it? And if I know our purpose, the answer to the question of Dean Magna or the YNC will become much more obvious, because there are things that we can do in the YNC, I guess, that we can't do here and vice versa. And then the whole question came up of, well, what about when we first moved out of the YNC? What was it we were called to do? And it became evident that there were a lot of people here now who were not here then. So they were being asked a question that they couldn't possibly answer because they didn't have all the information. We believed as a church, and please correct me if I'm wrong, and this is just not the whole detail of it, but that we were called out to serve our community. And for that, there was an almost a symbolic step we had to take of getting out of our comfort zone of our own building and going somewhere else. It wasn't here, it was a vantage point at first. So I think that is the question we have to come back to. Is our purpose now the same as it was then? If you don't know what our purpose was then, that is something we need to be reminded of and talk about. But sometimes God brings these questions up to say, just hang on a minute, this is what I called you to then. Have you finished that? Because if you haven't, then maybe that's something you need to carry on with. If you have, or if you haven't got the will to do it, then maybe we need to look in another direction. Or maybe God is saying, actually, that was for then, this is for now. There's a chorus that says, a song that says, break my heart for what breaks yours. Everything I have for your kingdom's cause. And I guess about 26 years ago, I can't remember the exact date, but I do remember there were lots of riots in our country. A lot of young people, very disillusioned, going out in the streets. A lot of damage done. And I remember praying, God, I want to know you, and I want to do anything I can to be part of stopping that. I don't want to see young people disenfranchised, hurt, rebelling. I want them to have what you have for them. Now, that was a very nice spiritual prayer, and you would expect God's answer maybe to send us to an inner city place like Liverpool or Leeds, or because we live quite close to Leeds, or London, or something like that. You see, God doesn't always do what we expect, does he? Because where did God send myself and Bill? He sent us to a beautiful little picturesque village in the Forest of Dean which we'd never heard of before. Interestingly enough, we either believe in coincidences or God incidences. But in the summer of 1995, I think if that's the right date, some friends of Bill's moved to Cheltenham and invited us down for a holiday. And we came to stay with them, had some lovely times with them, and they said, "You've got to come and see the Forest of Dean, it's beautiful." So I've driven many, many times, often came on holiday with my parents and grandparents down to Cornwall from up north. So skirted round the edge, but I'd never heard of the Forest of Dean until then. We came, and it indeed was beautiful and picturesque, and think, oh, because I love trees. I absolutely love trees. And I said to Bill, wouldn't it be amazing if we could live somewhere like this? We got back home, and about 3 weeks later, Bill was made redundant from his job. He, at that time, he was working for a cancer support centre, having period out full-time ministry, and he was working for a cancer charity, and he was made redundant. And we started looking at adverts, and one of the first ones we picked up was a Christianity magazine, and in the back there was a little advert that said something like, and I can't remember, I'm sure John would remember because I'm sure he was one of the ones who put the thing in there, was small village church in Forest of Dean wanting to move on with God, seeking a pastor or something like that. And we both looked, and we'd never heard of the Forest of Dean before this, you know. So we just felt that that was sort of something we needed to follow up. There was lots of other things, and I can tell you about those, but that isn't the sort of main point where I'm saying sometimes God does the unexpected with us, not what we're expecting. And although to us the obvious might be certain things, they're not that obvious to God. You see, if you just look at the practicalities of Dean Magner and the YNC, if I had my normal human preference, and if I look at it logically, the church isn't quite as big as it was. We haven't got as many kids as we had. Youth could, you know, fit in different places to what they could before. Finances may be an issue. You know, we're paying a lot of money for a building like this. So logically, if you're looking at finance and space and comfort and being in the centre of the village, then the YNC is the obvious answer, isn't it? That's the practicalities of it. But let me just ask you a question. Is that God's purpose for this church? Or is it to go out into all nations, and our all nations is the Forest of Dean, let's face it, isn't it? That's where we are. And share the good news with the people, share the good news with the poor and oppressed, heal the sick, raise the dead, a few other simple things like that. If that's our purpose, then maybe we just need to listen. It may well still be the YNC, I have to say, because we have to listen to what God is saying. But it isn't just about finance and space and what, you know, what feels comfortable. As I was thinking about that, I thought, actually, you know, the YNC building, it's amazing, isn't it? That there were just certainly a few elderly ladies who were left, who prayed that God would do something, and out of that eventually grew Mitchell Dean Christian Fellowship and Forest Gate Church. A similar thing happened in the church that I came from in Castleford, in that there was an elderly couple, it'd been a congregational church, and there was an elderly couple, and there was only sort of them really left praying, and they prayed, "God do something, you know, we don't think you're finished with this yet." And out of that grew a church which was eventually called Salem Church, and then Castleford Christian Fellowship and Five Towns Christian Fellowship. So you can see Salem was the little estate they lived on, Castleford was the town, Five Towns was the five towns around the area. So God called us to bigger and bigger things. And we've always, in that, given God thanks for those praying people who persevered. And we focus on the power of prayer, and rightly so. Rightly so. The faithfulness of the few, again, rightly so. The rebirth of a church, rightly so. But do you know the disturbing question that God asked me? How did it get to that? Because presumably there must have been a thriving church of God in and around that building, and I understand for a few hundred years. So how did it get down to four people? Or three people, or six, however many it was, who had to cry out to God to do something? Is it because somewhere along the line, some people had lost sight of God's purpose for the church in Mitchell-Dean? It's not something I really want to think about. But are we in danger of just jogging along nicely, thank you, and doing bits and pieces, listening to some good sermons and some not so good sermons, sharing our love occasionally with some people, praying occasionally, just getting along? What are we doing to stop that happening again? It's a bit of a sobering thought, and it's not the one I want to end with. But was it because of the lack of prayer previous to those ladies in that couple in that both churches praying? Was it because there wasn't enough money in the bank to sustain the vision? And therefore, ideas and purpose shrunk back to what was manageable, to the amount of money in the bank? Was it because the people were unclear about the purpose and the mission of the church at that time? Was it because the leaders felt that if they preached in a certain way, if they encouraged the people in a certain way, that people would leave the church and numbers would be reduced, and that again would have a effect on the bank balance? Was it a fear of the work of the Holy Spirit? And I think this is quite a big one for us. You see, the work of the Holy Spirit is more than just making people speak in tongues, doing weird things and falling up and down. Those may well be signs and symptoms if God chooses to do that. But actually, if we're afraid of the Holy Spirit coming in and really leading and guiding us, what we're missing is discernment, faith, knowledge, companionship. Because those are the things I believe we really need at this moment in time, to discern what God is saying, how he's saying it, and what he's calling us to. Is it because we couldn't all agree? They couldn't all agree on something. Do you know, I've had conversations this week, there's things we'll never agree on. There are things that I have a preference for that other people in this room will not have a preference for. I love sung worship. I love just worshipping God like that. I love noisy worship. I love the drums. I love all that. I love getting together to pray. There are some people who, as an expression of worship, like to just sit quiet and hear God like that. Am I wrong or are they wrong? That is just a preference, isn't it? But actually, we can still be of the same purpose. We can agree to disagree on the way we worship and how we express our worship. But we have to agree that together, our purpose is to love God. However we express that, to know God, however we receive that. You see, having a vision isn't enough. there has to be a commitment to act on it, to do something about it. Personally, and this is my personal opinion, I don't think God has finished doing with us what he called us to do 10 years ago. But that's my opinion. It might be God's opinion as well. And that's what we need to find out together, isn't it? Very interestingly, one of the things that at the time we had a real desire to work within the community with young families, and I still believe that's there, but we linked up with local children's centres who at that time were amenable to our linking up with them, and we did a lot of work with the children's centres and in the village, and I had the privilege of being a bit of a part of that. And at the same time, I was doing quite a bit of studying. And as part of my study, I'd gone to a place called Pen Green, which I'm not expecting many of you would have heard of, but it's a children's family centre in Corby in Northamptonshire. And I went with my fellow students, and we had a look around this amazing place. And I came back, and I remember saying, and thanks to Louise initially, you just got to come and see it. I wish you could come and see it. Because in that place, and as far as I know, it's not a Christian organisation. I'm sure there are Christians working in there. But it in itself isn't a church thing. But the way they ministered to families, to young people, to children, getting them to be independent and work with them and volunteer and work alongside them, the way they'd scrabbled together money from all kinds of places, the way that gifts of money had been given to them from unexpected places was amazing. And I think it was about a couple of years later, it was 2011, I do remember it was January, it was dark when we set off and it was dark when we got back, that's what I do remember. Myself and Steve and Louise went to Pen Green, and I think it was part of the fact that I said, come and see. Come and see for yourself. I can't tell you properly what it's like. And I thought, I just hope they catch something of what I saw, because that wasn't, you know, didn't have to be the outcome. I think it's fair to say you did. and it was an amazing place. This is what, you know, if this is what some people can do, then we as a church, why have we not got the faith to believe that X, Y, Z? I just wondered this week what's happened to Pen Green, because at the time we were there, they were telling us they were going to have £1 million cut from their budget. I think that was right, wasn't it? We're now 7 years on, so I, with trepidation, went in to see what's happened to Pen Green. What do you think has happened to Pen Green? Any guesses? It's expanded. They've got now 3 nursery rooms, which is a separate entity under a head teacher. They've expanded their family work. Again, they're experiencing initiatives from the government to say that they have to work with the children's centre, but they are now working together. And what they've put on their information is, we are working together to provide the best outcomes we can for children and families. We are working together. It's not what we initially started out to do, but that's, and I'm guessing all the 4 children's centres were quite different in their makeup. So, as I said, I've probably got more questions than answers this morning. But what is our purpose as a church? And more importantly, are we in it together? One of the songs Jonathan picked this morning was about us being in one voice. That doesn't mean we have to agree absolutely with everything. Some of us are silent worshippers and some of us are noisy worshippers. Some of us are very practical people and would far rather the church do lots of practical things and not really bother praying and let somebody else do that. Whether we agree that prayer meetings should be the main focus or evangelism should be the main focus or whatever we do in the community. But it's what we do. What is it that we are called to together that all those things fit into. And if you're a prayer, can I suggest that sometimes you need to be practical? Even if you physically cannot attend work parties, you can pray for the fact that it's good weather, safety, and so on. If you have got any physical ability, then maybe you can't lift, but you can make a cup of tea. If you're a practical person and there's a prayer meeting, maybe you're a silent prayer and think, if I go, I'll just sit there and pray silently. That's fine, God can hear you even if we can't. Because we need to see each other and support each other in what we're doing in our purpose. So, what is our purpose? And what is holding us back from doing that together? Can I suggest that there's some questions that probably we need to answer? And this is going right back to, I think, the first time I spoke. Do I belong? Do you know God as Father, walk with Jesus, the Son, and know the guidance and presence of the Holy Spirit? Is it as fundamental as that, that you need to know Jesus before you can answer any of these other questions? Do you, and this is a hard one, do you love this church? Not do you like it, not do you get on with the people in it, because at times we'll all have our disagreements, but do you love this church? Because Jesus wants us to love his church. Do you know what our purpose is? And if you do, what are you waiting for? Are we waiting till God parachutes a super duper pastor in who comes fully financed of his own finances or her finances, because it could be a she? Are we waiting for a building to spring up in the middle of Mitcheldean miraculously that God has provided for us? I know I'm being a bit facetious, but sometimes we expect God to do the things that we can do. And in the absence of some of those things, we have to work with what we have, but it has to be together. It's a bit of a scary thought, because I felt that I needed to speak about purpose, but leaving with lots of questions is quite a tricky one. And I feel I've had to be quite blunt, and in some ways I apologise for that, but on the other hand I don't, because if that's what God's saying, that's what God's saying. I would encourage you, again, please listen to Steve's two sermons again, because it does, I think all of it together means something, and what Bishop Rachel said last week was very in tune with where we are at this point in time. There's several scriptures that keep coming back, and I know I said I wouldn't speak very long and I've spoken a long time, but if my people keeps coming back in different ways, if my people will enlarge the place of your tent, keeps coming back through lots of things that we hear and have been called to in our church. And then there's something else that I just keeps coming back, and it's from a couple of things from sermons way, way back, not in this church, but in previous church. Break up your fallow ground and do not sow among thorns. Are there things that we need to break up? Are things that have got hard in us or as an individual, as a church, that we need to break up? And I just want to finish with reading this passage from Genesis 26, quite a lengthy one. Genesis 26, verse 12 to 22. Isaac planted crops in that land, and the same year reaped 100-fold, because the Lord blessed him. Have you got the rest of that? Sorry. The man became rich, and his wealth continued to grow until he became very wealthy. He had so many flocks and herds and servants that the Philistines envied him. So all the wells that his father's servants had dug in time of his father Abraham, the Philistines stopped up, filling them with earth. Then Abimelech said to Isaac, "Move away from us, you've become too powerful for us." So Isaac moved away from there and encamped in the valley of Gerar and settled there. Isaac reopened the wells that had been dug in the time of his father Abraham, which the Philistines had stopped up after Abraham died. And he gave them the same names that his father had given them. Isaac's servants dug in the valley and discovered a well of fresh water there. But the herdsmen of Gerar quarrelled with Isaac's herdsmen and said, "That water's ours." So he named the well Esek because they disputed with him. Then they dug another well, but they quarrelled over that one also. So he named it Sitnah. He moved on from there and dug another well, and no one quarrelled over it. He renamed it Rehoboth, saying, "Now the Lord has given us room, and we will flourish in the land." So are there some wells we need to dig up that we've buried with our own ideas and thoughts so that God, we can make room for God to do what he wants to do with us? What is our purpose? What are you waiting for? And I'm not talking about, you know, I'm just pointing it at you. I'm saying, what are you as an individual waiting for? What are we waiting for as a church before we do anything about it? I believe that a lot of things have been said for such a time as this. You're very welcome to come and disagree with me. Please do. Please don't moan about me behind my back. Come and talk to me, because I've said something that isn't right. I want to know, and please say that. But I think we've been challenged over the past few weeks to just, if nothing else, to just think about, where are we going as a church? Are we, as my sort of title was, are we moving on?